Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashachade Shatadade Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Read from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3 Chapter 20 Text 19. Visasajatmanakayam Nabinandam stamomayam Jagrahur yaksha raksamsi Ratram kshud trit samudbhavam Visasajatmanakayam Nabinandangstamomayam Jagrahur yaksha rakshansi Ratram kshud trit samudbhavam Visasarja, threw off Atmana, his own, kayam, body, na, not, abhinandan, being pleased, tamomayam, made of ignorance, jagruhu, took possession, yaksha rakshansi, the yakshas and rakshasas, ratrim, night, kshut, hunger, thirst, samudbhavam, the source. Translation: out of disgust, Brahma threw off the body of ignorance, and taking this opportunity, yakshas and rakshasas sprang for possession of the body, which continued to exist in the form of night. Night is the source of hunger and thirst. Text 20. Overpowered by hunger and thirst, they ran to devour Brahma from all sides and cried, "Spare him not, eat him up." Purport: the representatives of the yakshas and rakshasas still exist in some countries of the world. It's understood that such uncivilized men take pleasure in killing their own grandfathers and holding a love feast by roasting the bodies. And I'll just read text 21. Brahma, the head of the devatas, demigods, full of anxiety, asked them, "Do not eat me, but protect me. You are born from me and have become my sons. Therefore, you are yakshas and rakshasas." Purport: the demons who were born from the body of Brahma were called yakshas and rakshasas because some of them cried that Brahma should be eaten and others cried that he should not be protected. The ones who said he should be eaten were called yakshas, and the ones who said he should not be protected were called rakshasas, man-eaters. The two, yakshas and rakshasas, are the original creation of Brahma and are represented even until today in the uncivilized men who are scattered all over the universe. They are born of the mode of ignorance, and therefore, because of their behavior, they are called rakshasas or man-eaters. So this chapter describes the creation of Lord Brahma. This is actually what we call the Visarga. There are 10 topics in the Bhagavatam, starting with Sarga, Visarga, and Stiti and Poshana. And it finally ends, all the topics end with Asraya, which means the shelter of everything, which is Krishna. We have these topics. We say the 9 topics are actually related to the material world. And we have the 10th topic, Krishna, who's beyond the material world. So the question may be asked, why are we discussing all about the material world for most of the Bhagavatam when the whole essence of the Bhagavatam is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna and his pastimes? The order or the advice that Narada Muni gave to Vyasadeva was, you should present to the people of Kali Yuga that the only object of worship is Krishna. That's the goal of the Bhagavatam. And so Vyasadeva made the Bhagavatam. But nevertheless, we see that all these other topics are there. Yes, Asraya, or Krishna, is one topic in the 10th canto, but we have all the other cantos, 11 cantos, describing creation, destruction, potion, all these other topics. So the question is why we need all these other topics. So our acharyas, of course, have said that we should not just selectively take the 10th canto and read the Bhagavatam, but rather we should read the whole Bhagavatam. It is all the work of Vyasadeva, recited by Sukadeva Goswami. So all of the different cantos and all the different topics have a function to perform in relation to Krishna. So, of course, the topics are there originally because the Puranas in general have these topics. Those which are the Mahapuranas will have 10 topics, and minor Puranas will have 5 topics. So it's just the general form of a Purana that they will have all these topics. So Vyasadeva has followed that form here and presented the 10 topics. But, of course, the emphasis is upon Krishna. So why do we have to study all these 10 topics just to conform to a Purana when ultimately the advice is just worship Krishna? So we can examine the Bhagavad Gita, which is another work spoken directly by Krishna. And the sub and substance of that work is Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Give up all dharmas and simply surrender unto me. So that's a simple message of the Bhagavad Gita. Yet, we have 18 chapters, and some of the chapters describing karma yoga and jnana yoga and astanga yoga and the material world and the elements that make up the material world, etc. So we have many chapters which are not describing bhakti at all. And Krishna himself speaks the Bhagavad Gita. So though the message of Bhagavad Gita and the message of Bhagavatam are actually very simple, and it's all about worshiping Krishna, still, there is always this process of describing other things as well. So why we have to describe other things as well? Of course, the one answer is because Krishna likes it that way. He just decides to do it that way. The other thing, of course, is that generally, we have the Vedic literatures, and they should all conform to each other. They should not be completely different. They should not be radically different. So they will cover the same subject matters. So in the Vedas, we'll find the Karma Kanda and the Gyan Kanda, Upasana Kanda, etc. And they'll present these different processes that are described in the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna, again, repeats whatever is in the Vedic literature. But the contribution of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita is to finally reject everything and simply say that Bhakti Yoga is the final process. So it's made very clear in the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita that bhakti is superior to everything else, and the advice is to only practice bhakti and worship Krishna. Mamekam Sharanam Vraja, just worship me. So that's the final message, which is not so clear if we just take all the Vedas and the Upanishads. That we can see there's some repetition of subject matters. And we'll find the same in the Bhagavatam. There is a discussion of karma yoga in many places, particularly in third canto with Kapila's teachings and in the 11th canto where Krishna speaks to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita. And we'll find elaborate descriptions of the Varnashram system, etc. We will have descriptions of jnana yoga, in spite of the fact that in so many places there's a condemnation of jnana and merging in Brahman because it is unfavorable for bhakti. So though it is condemned, at the same time, we have all sections dedicated to jnana. And in fact, Kapila dedicates 3 chapters to impersonal jnana in the third canto. And again, Krishna dedicates many chapters in the 11th canto to jnana, moksha, liberation. And of course, Astanga Yoga is again described quite elaborately in the 11th canto by Krishna. So we have all these things described there. Plus, we have all the material elements and the creation of the material world described in quite a bit of detail, particularly in the third and fourth cantos. So they are the subjects Sarga and Visarga, which are two topics of the Puranas, and which are also, they trace their origin back to the Upanishads, which also describe creation. So these topics are there because they are simply following the previous topics from the Upanishads and the Vedas and other works. But with a slightly different conclusion. So here we have Sarga and Visarga. So they are important in one sense, and they're in the Puranas because we have to have a clear idea of, one, a material world that's real, it's not false, it's not Maya. It's actually true. So we can't create something which is false. A false creation, we can't even, shouldn't even discuss it. So there's a whole detailed description of how Brahma creates the material world here, and it doesn't say it's unreal in any way. And previously, the discussion of how Mahavishnu glances over Prakriti and creation. It doesn't say that Prakriti is illusory. Then why would Mahavishnu glance over an illusion, something which wasn't there, out of ignorance? And then that makes the Lord ignorant also. So one aspect of the descriptions of Sarga, Visarga, etc. is to show that the world is real, to counteract the idea that everything is illusion and only Brahman exists. That's one thing. The other, of course, is that instrumental in the creation is the Supreme Lord. He is the creator. He does something. This, again, is a refutation of the Mayavad concept that Brahman does nothing. Everything else is illusion, so how can the Lord do anything? Because there is nothing existing. So the Lord has no activity. He doesn't create a material world at all. But very clearly we see in the Bhagavad, yes, Mahavishnu glances, and that causes the creation of the material world, and then he empowers Brahma to carry out the secondary creation. So it's all instigated by the Supreme Lord. So this distinguishes the Supreme Lord, of course, from material world and from the jivas. Because we find here the description of some jivas, they take these bodies of yakshas and rakshasas in the material world, covered by ignorance. And the Supreme Lord never takes that position of ignorance. He's never covered by ignorance at all. And we find that even Brahma is unable to create the material world unless he is inspired by the Supreme Lord. So this shows that Brahma is not independent. He is not the creator either. He depends on Supreme Lord. So therefore, the Sarga Visarga, they illustrate the fact that the Lord has a superior position to everyone else and that his creation is real. And then we, of course, after that we have, it's quite methodically described how we have Poshana. The Lord creates the material world. He creates bodies for jivas in the material world, and they are covered by ignorance. As we see here, the yakshas and rakshasas covered by ignorance. But the Lord does not ignore the living entities. Of course, he is sama. He's just kind of neutral in one sense, but he does not ignore them. Inbuilt in the whole creation of the material world, there's an arrangement for the jivas to show compassion to them. So the Lord, first of all, gives them bodies through Brahma, as described here. Then, where do the bodies exist? He creates lokas for them according to their qualities and according to their nature. They are given different places to reside in the material world. So it's broadly distributed into 14 levels. And those who are the highest get to Brahmaloka, those who are the lowest are down on Patalaloka. And in between we get all grades of living entities, a mixture of Tama and Rajagun, and then above that we get Sattvagun and Svargaloka and above. So these are all places for the living entities. So that's described in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. That's the sthiti or the sthana. the geography of the universe, planetary systems, locations, where the jivas get a body and they can enjoy in a very appropriate way. In a sense, they can use their senses and eat, sleep, mate, and defend in these different lokas. So that's one arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So this is the mercy of the Lord in the sense that he supplies them their enjoyment. The Lord understands that the living entities want to enjoy independently, so he gives them bodies and he gives them places to do it in the material universe. That's his compassion in one sense. But then he has another compassion to counteract that, to get them out of the material world. So we have the next topic, poshana, or protection, or guidance of the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord tries to elevate the living entities out of this position of tamogun, etc., and elevate them through the gunas, from tamogun to sattvagun, and then from sattvagun beyond sattvagun to liberation, and beyond liberation to prema. So the Lord makes these arrangements within the material world. So the initial description is given with the poshana, which means the Lord protects the people in the material world, even if they're not devotees. And that is illustrated in the sixth canto with the example of Ajamil, who was not a devotee but got protection of the Lord. How? Because there was some connection with the Lord, though it was accidental, and that was the name of the Lord. He chanted the name of Narayan accidentally. He got protection. Yamadutas could not punish him. So, therefore, the Lord makes arrangements in the material world through various means, such as his name and the process of bhakti, etc., and devotees of the Lord. These are some processes. So that is described there, poshana. And then the next topic is called uti. And utis mean urges. That's the basic urges or impulses. So what it refers to is basically what is described here in the creation of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma gives bodies to living entities. He doesn't create the jivas, and the natures are already there from previous universe. But according to their nature, the Lord creates bodies. And generally the natures of two types, demons and devotees. The world is divided into two categories, those who are favorable to the Lord, those who are unfavorable. And here we see the unfavorable creations here. The yakshas and rakshasas, etc. So this gives rise to great competition in the material world. And we have whole races of demons, the daityas, the sons of Diti, Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha and their followers, etc. We get daityas and then and demons of that sort. And then we get the devas, on the other hand. That is the devas in Swargaloka who get attacked by demons like Hiranyakasipu or Hiranyaksha. And then we get the devotees of the Lord who are also considered to be deva. And there's continual competition in the material world. So we'll find throughout the Bhagavatam various conflicts that arise because of this. Bali Maharaj, for instance, he conquers the heavenly planets or whatever like that. So periodically the demons get strong, and then the devas get removed from their position, and the Lord has to make some arrangement for them. So that conflict in the material world is shown. However, though there is a conflict, the Lord sides with the deva. So that's another arrangement of the Lord. Though we find that according to nature, people get all their bodies, still the Lord favors the sattvic aspect and the devotional aspect over the tamasic and rajic aspects. So he protects them. So that is the, and we find in the case of Prahlad, the daitya was Hiranyakasipu, previous Hiranyaksha. And then Prahlad comes along, he's a devotee of the Lord. So immediately we get a conflict there. And the Lord sides with the devotee and protects the devotee there. So in some cases, because of this conflict, the Lord himself manifests. So the Lord comes as avatar, that's his mercy again, to side with the devotees and the devatas and give them protection. And we'll see that over and over, like Vamana comes and protects and humiliates Bali from taking over the heavenly kingdom. Or Ramchandra comes and he defeats Ravana. and his followers. Or Krishna comes and defeats Kamsa and all those persons who are also demons. So the Lord comes as avatar and does this. So we get the topic of the Manvantaras. The Manvantaras are avatars that appear throughout the day of Brahma in the different periods of Manu. We have the Manus appearing 14 times, and then we have the Manvantara avatars appearing 14 times. So there's a Manu like Svayambhuva Manu, and then the particular avatar that reigns over 71 yuga cycles is Yajna. And presently, Vaivasvata Manu is the reigning Manu for 71 yuga cycles at the present moment. And the avatar is Vamanadeva. So they act as what presiding deities over the whole period. So we have the Leela avatars who come for a short period of time. And then we have the Manvantara avatars who actually preside over a whole 71 yuga cycles. And that, the total of 14 times 71 adds up to 1,000. So throughout the day of Brahma, there is protection by the Lord in the form of the avatars as well. Of course, the Manvantara avatar also expands into the Yuga avatar. So as we go from Satyatreta Kali Yuga, again, through the Manvantara avatars, we get the Yuga avatars to preserve bhakti and dharma. So another arrangement of the Lord. So the Manvantara avatars are described in the 8th canto, where it describes even the future Manvantara avatars. And we have other stories about the Lord, how he appears in the material world, etc. That's Ishanukata, the avatars of the Lord, etc., and the devotees, etc. So the Lord gives his, intervenes personally and helps the devotees, etc. So the whole purpose, of course, is the Manvantara avatars, the Manus, for instance, who act under the Manvantara avatars, is to preserve Dharma, the Varnashram system, by producing a line of kings that goes on for 71 yuga cycles. So that is Dharma in general. Simultaneously, those Manvantara, the Manus, are also devotees of the Lord. So they present Dharma in the sense of Varnashram system. They also present bhakti. And we have good examples of like Dhruva Maharaj or Ambarish, who are very, very great devotees as well. So by preserving the kings, the Lord preserves Dharma and prevents Tama from rising too strongly. And he also introduces the process of bhakti, worship of the Supreme Lord. So good arrangement of the Lord. The whole purpose of this is, first of all, moksha, for the living entities to get out of the material world. And moksha is of two types. One moksha is get to Brahman stage through jnana or yoga. The other moksha is to get to prema through the process of bhakti. So as I said, these are presented by the avatars and the devotees of the Lord throughout the day of Brahma. So the Lord makes arrangement for enjoyment in the material world by giving the bodies and the lokas, etc., and giving them the law of karma so they can enjoy properly. And then he starts restricting that enjoyment through the process of dharma to gradually elevate them, even of course they may be unconscious of what's happening, because when you're in tamagun you don't care one way or the other. Still, through the process of dharma, the people of tamagun gradually rise up, and birth after birth after birth, till they become sattvic, and then suddenly they become free from their material attachments and they inquire about Brahman. So we have artha dharma kama in a restricted way. And then moksha. The jivas are trained well enough through the Varnashram Dharma so that they will strive for getting out of the material world instead of joining in the material world. So that's also the protection of the Lord, to get them out of the material world, not just supply the material, but also to get them out. So these are all the various means the Lord uses. So that's one of them, get out of the material world. And we have the processes of jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. So various personalities present these different teachings for the living entities. That's moksha. If the living entities don't get out, then they continually get born in the material world until final destruction takes place. So that's another topic of the Bhagavatam. And the ninth topic is Nirodha, destruction. So, the final destruction, of course, is the big one, the Mahapralaya, where the whole universe dissolves. And just as it was created by Mahavishnu by his glance, and then it gradually evolves into all the material elements and they form into universes, this goes through the same procedure, but backwards. And destruction, and things begin to dissolve into their primal elements, all the matter, all forms, and dissolve into earth, water, air, fire, ether, etc. And they begin to merge into the subtle elements gradually, the mind and into false ego. And false ego merges into Mahatattva. Mahatattva merges into Prakriti. And by that time, everything's disappeared because Prakriti is invisible. It's not manifest at all. So everything, all the forms, the bodies, everything, the universe is dissolved into this very subtle substance called Prakriti. And then it remains neutral at that stage. And what happens to the jivas? The jivas enter Mahavishnu and they go to sleep for some time. And so that's the destruction. Why they go to sleep in Mahavishnu? Because they didn't take any chance. They didn't get moksha. They didn't get prema. They didn't stop their rebirth in the material world. They didn't destroy their karmas. So they go into Mahavishnu, come out again, and again their karmas continue in another universe, and the creation takes place again, and the Lord makes the same arrangement. You know, sarga, visarga, stana, poshana, etc. again. And then, so the Lord has an intelligent plan behind this whole creation of the material world. So basically all of these different topics in the Bhagavatam are there to illustrate how the Lord actually never abandons the jivas in the material world. So if there's any problem, it's because of the jivas, not the Lord. If people are in ignorance and don't want the process, then they continue in the material world. But we see the Lord is continually offering process as he continually comes, yuga after yuga after yuga, into the material world. His devotees there to present the process. The holy name is there to deliver the living entities. And if they don't take it, that's their great misfortune. If they refuse to take it, the Lord can do nothing about that. So the Lord makes all arrangements for the jivas to get out, etc. So these are the nine topics to describe the position of the Lord in relation to the material world and how he's very compassionate. But the tenth topic is Asraya. Of course, Asraya means the Supreme Lord in general, so other Puranas like Vishnu Purana, the Asraya will be Vishnu. But with the Bhagavatam, the Asraya is Krishna. He is the final cause of everything. So that means that Krishna is the, we can say, the origin of not only everything in the material world, but everything in the spiritual world as well. So we put Krishna at the top, and then we have all the different forms like Rama and Ashrama and Vishnu forms and other avatar forms in the spiritual world. And we get Mahavishnu, and he creates the material world, and then we get the avatars appearing within the material world. So at the very top we have Krishna. Why? Because that is the whole purpose of Bhagavatam, to show how Krishna is the most perfect form of the Lord. And because he's the most perfect, therefore we say he's the original cause. Of course, there's no origin in the sense that only Krishna existed, then he created other forms. No. All the forms of Bhagavan are actually one, and there is no creation of any of them, so they're all eternal. But he's called the origin, or the original form, or Swayam Bhagavan, because he manifests all the qualities in full, and the others manifest partial qualities. So that's why we put him on top and call him the origin of everything. Put him on top. So the whole the final purpose of Bhagavatam is to describe that all of this leads back to Krishna. Though we have the Lord in the general form of the Purusha avatars who are worshipable, like Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, and Mahavishnu, who's the creator of the material world. He's the direct implementer of sarga, the creation by glancing. Still, beyond that Mahavishnu is just, we could say, an expansion. He is another form of the Lord for a particular function. And therefore, he manifests a limited number of qualities. Though it's very great, because he's the creator of the material world, manifests the avatar. So he's put in a special position, very, very great, that no jiva can attain that position. But in comparison to the spiritual world, actually, this is nothing Mahavishnu is nothing in one sense, because more important than the powers that he manifests to create the material world is the bliss that the Lord gives to the jivas in the spiritual world. So those forms of Bhagavan are more important than the Purush avatars, which are Paramatma forms. So you get the Bhagavan forms. But the ultimate form is Krishna, because with Krishna one can establish the most intimate relationships and constantly they get the most bliss. So the whole purpose of Bhagavatam is to lead the jivas out of the material world to by worshipping that highest form of Krishna. And by that, the jiva gets the best benefit because they get the highest bliss. So, in presenting all these different topics, the purpose is to actually relate them all to Krishna. Generally, we'll think, okay, creation, maintenance, destruction, okay, there's a form of the Supreme Lord and he's, you know, powerful, etc., like that. So then our conception of God is he's a powerful entity that creates the material world and destroys the material world. But that is only one minor aspect of God. But surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, most religions, that's as far as they get of defining God. He's a powerful entity that creates the material world. And nothing, not much more than that. They can't really say much more about God than that, that he creates the material world and he knows everything. But those are so general. Just with that, we cannot really establish an intimate relationship with God. Just like you cannot establish an intimate relationship with the prime minister or a king or whatever like that, simply because they're great. That doesn't arouse affection. So you have to understand more qualities about God and how he relates to people, etc., in various ways. So that arises because the Lord appears in the material world as Krishna, and he manifests his pastimes, and through those pastimes, we see his sweetness, how he is controlled by his devotees. But we will not see that simply by his creation of the material world. But when the Lord enters in the material world and he performs pastimes in which he is tied up by Mother Yasoda or obligated to his devotees by being the chariot driver of Arjuna and like that, we see that the Lord is very, very affectionate towards his devotees and falls under their control even though he's Supreme Lord. And he acts for the benefit, their benefit especially, more than for other persons. So in this way we get to appreciate the sweet aspect of the Supreme Lord when Krishna manifests himself in the material world. So ultimately all of these topics are there to gradually lead us not only to respect the Lord but eventually to understand that the origin of all of this is finally the final object of worship is Krishna. And that we worship Krishna, that's the easiest way of getting out of this creation of the material world, which otherwise is very, very difficult to surpass. So we get these different descriptions here, so we should not lose our focus and get too distracted by all these different descriptions. We should understand they're only in relation to glorification of the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, some of the aspects of the material are not so nice. So here we got the yakshas and rakshasas who like eating people. So they're very violent. They have no rules and regulations, or what we find is civilized conduct or whatever. So their rules are quite low. Their hunger and thirst are satisfied in very primitive means. So, in other words, covered by ignorance. And that was described in the previous verse. It described the, I think, five varieties of ignorance for the living entities in the material world. So, in the creation of Brahma, inherently, we will have such living entities. So we can never expect to have a perfect world. Because these entities are never going to disappear. Every day of Brahma, they're going to be a creation and they're going to be these type of personalities, not so many other grades as well, in Tamagun and Rajagun. We'll find all these persons. So even the devotees should not expect to find a perfect world. There will be demons in the material world. There'll be enemies, etc., at all times. You can never escape them. However, Kali Yuga is worse because each Kali Yuga we get a rise of tamogun. It predominates, whereas Satyuga predominates. So as we go through the yugas, gradually there's a decline, and we get Kali Yuga, then there's a predominance of tamogun. So we get the opportunity to meet more demons in Kali Yuga. However, in spite of that, the process of bhakti is such that it is independent of the gunas. It operates completely independently. It is not, in other words, we don't have to have sattva-gun before we do bhakti. We can do bhakti even if there's tamogun surroundings. And bhakti arises independently of gunas. So it may arise in a sudra or a mlecha or anybody. It doesn't depend on gunas to arouse. So it's not some brahmanas are in sattva-gun, but it doesn't mean they become devotees. So it's not dependent on the gunas for its arousal, and in spite of the gunas, bhakti can develop. So whether it's tamogun, rajagun, or sattvagun, any place in the universe, from patala loka to brahma loka, bhakti can be practiced. There is in the second canto, the chatursloki. So therefore it says the practice of bhakti is at all times, sarvada and sarvatra, everywhere. That means from the top of the universe to the bottom of the universe and all these different places, you can do bhakti. Other processes, you cannot do that. Lower planetary systems, you do not do varnashram system. You cannot do jnana or yoga. It is useless. But you can do bhakti from the bottom in the most tamasic state all the way up to the top. So everywhere in the universe, it's available. And of course, in terms of time, we got from the good times in Satyuga to the bad times in Kali Yuga. But the process of bhakti continues there, in spite of the fact that in Kali Yuga we can't do Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, or Astanga Yoga. Very, very difficult to do those processes because it requires some rules and regulations enforced by a king who's absent at the moment. He's not present, so it's very difficult for us to do. Plus, there's a prominence of tamogun. So very, very difficult to do that. And of course, if it's tamasic, we can't do jnana yoga or astanga yoga, which requires sattva. So at any place and any time, in any yuga, from the beginning of the day of Brahma to the end of the day of Brahma, it can be done. And not only that, everywhere, not just in the material world, but everywhere beyond the material world, bhakti continues. So in the spiritual world, bhakti also continues. And karma yoga, gyan yoga, and astanga yoga do not continue because they're material. So bhakti is everywhere in the material world, everywhere in the spiritual world. Everywhere in the spiritual world, the Lord and his devotees are there, and the devotees are all doing bhakti. So it is throughout the material and spiritual creations. And of course, in the spiritual world, it's going on at all times. It's continuous bhakti because there's no other process. And the devotees have permanent prema, so they're continually doing bhakti. So it is at all times as well as all places and whatever like that. So in spite of the fact that we do have the demons in the material world, the process of bhakti is convenient because we can always do it in spite of all the different obstacles that are there. Okay, any question?
You mentioned a different topic about two possibilities. One is there's no direct connection between the last three and the sequence in Bhagavad, the canto of Bhagavad, the Niroma of Dhirashraya. And if you see the Bhagavad, the canto.
The Asraya comes in the middle before the last two,
yeah.
Moksha and Nirodha. Yeah.
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 So,
well, of course, Jiva Goswami says actually we cannot identify a particular canto with a particular subject since there's 12 cantos and 10 topics. So obviously that's in itself impossible. And we'll find that there's always various topics in various cantos, not just one topic. But Sridhar Swami and Vishnu Chakravarti also take the idea that there is some. We say unique topics
of different cantos. So obviously, the fifth canto is unique because of that description of the universe and Bhumandala and upper and lower planetary systems, which you don't see in the other cantos to any extent, at least. So that's prominent there. And for instance, the Manus are described in the eighth canto. That's particular to the eighth canto, whatever like that. So we do find, and third and fourth, obviously, Sarga Visarga is described in quite a bit of detail there. So we do have some prominence of topics in certain cantos. So it's something like the Bhagavad Gita, where Vishnu Chakravarti divides it into three parts, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. Though, even in the first six chapters, we'll get Bhakti and we'll get Jnana as well. Like fifth chapter is a lot of Jnana, and Bhakti is also there even in the second chapter. But there's a prominence of the theme is more or less how everything relates to Karma Yoga there. And then it's obvious that the middle six chapters are all Bhakti Yoga, and the second, of course, is a mixture again, but there's a prominence of Jnana. So just by prominence, sometimes the divisions are made. So that's what Vishwanath and Sridhar Swami do with the Bhagavatam, and by prominence they select those particular cantos. Just for convenience sake, I suppose, like that. As for the order, of course, we do have Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga should therefore be last in Bhagavad Gita, but it's not, it's in the middle. So Vishnu Chakravarti's explanation is twofold. One is that Bhakti is a jewel, so it should be protected. So like we have a jewel case with a top and a bottom, a lid and a bottom part, and then we have the jewel inside. So the Bhakti is like the middle part. We have the lower part, the Karma Yoga, and the Jnana on top. So it acts like a jewel case, the two, and encases it. The other is, he says, is that this shows that the other two do not exist without Bhakti. So they have to have contact with Bhakti. So if we put Bhakti in the middle, there's contact with the first six chapters and contact with the last six chapters. So it gives life to these processes, and without them, Jnana cannot give liberation, and Karma cannot give Swargaloka without some Bhakti, recognition of the Supreme Lord. So that's his rationale. So we can use the same rationale in the Bhagavatam, I suppose. It should relate, they stick it in the middle to make a little case or whatever like that for it. Though it's not particularly Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga in terms of other topics and other cantos. Yeah, we have Rakshasas and other Gandharvas, many types of beings up there.
So, as per you, you said, as per the rest, Rakshasas are more violent. And so, why
are they superior?
Why they are not higher
planet? I think one, it's not explained anywhere, but my explanation is that because their bodies are more subtle. We have quite gross bodies with a lot of water and earth element in it. So the higher bodies, like devatas, there's a prominence of water more, and therefore we can't even see those devatas. So in between we get the yakshas, rakshasas, gandharvas, which are kind of subtle also, though they do have some tamasic, rajasic gunas too. The bodies are subtle, and we have trouble seeing those entities also. basically, rakshasas, of course, is a particular being that likes to eat people. So an asura may not eat people, but he's still bad. So the yakshas, of course, it says here, of course, are also eaters or whatever, but generally the yakshas are, I think, like Kuvera. They're the guardians of the treasures or something like that. So they have a particular function also.
And
Who is?
With neither awe and respect or intimacy.
Yeah.
So we initially start bhakti with, you know, acceptance of Supreme Lord, so he is in a superior position. And that may continue as we do vaidhi bhakti, etc. Particularly if we do worship forms of the Lord who naturally invoke reverence like Vishnu or Rama, etc. So in that sense, we develop that respect, and that becomes, we could say, constitutional or part of our bhava, etc., as we develop. Or, in the case of Krishna, then it can change. We can continue with the respect, or we can change also simply by hearing the wonderful pastimes of Krishna, particularly in the first part of the 10th canto. So then we develop more attraction for the spontaneous love that the people of Vrindavan show for Krishna, and they don't give him regard as Supreme Lord at all. So if we develop in that, and we hear those topics, and we develop that attraction, then that replaces that awe and respect. So generally, it develops the attraction for Krishna in his sweet form, develops by association with devotees who also have such attraction, and by hearing the pastimes of Krishna, which illustrate that. No. You can go from any place, but generally the Bhumandala, and particularly Varsha, is very favorable. And one, of course, is because all the avatars come here and Krishna comes here. And we get the Harinam. Because the Yugas don't really manifest in the other Varshas even. It's Bharat Varsha where the Yugas manifest, and therefore we get the Yuga avatars manifesting here also. So, and then we get Lord Chaitanya, which makes it very convenient. So even the devatas want to come here to participate in that. So in that sense, it's there. But the people in Brahmaloka, if they're qualified, when Brahma ends his life, they all get liberated and they go to the spiritual world also. So it's not just from Varsha, but anywhere they can go if they're qualified. But it is very convenient to follow the process in Bharat Varsha because of the assistance we get from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna and others. They have pastimes, but Krishna is, of course, in the Kaishwar age, eternally in the spiritual world. Whereas he has a baby form, then he has a Pauganda form, then he has a Kaishwar form in Vrindavan here. So there's a little bit of a difference. But nevertheless, there is Vatsalya Rasa in the spiritual world, and Yasoda, Nanda, and others, elder gopas and gopis, have this relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. So they have daily pastimes with him, in spite of the fact he's a little older. Okay. Hare Krishna.